In the remote Peloponnesian township of Phlius, I, Echecrates, encountered Phaedo of Elis, one of the men who were present during the final hours of Socrates.
My curiosity was piqued, and I pressed Phaedo to recount the events of that fateful day.
Phaedo began his narrative by describing the gathering of Socrates' friends in his cell. Among them were his old friend Crito and two Pythagorean philosophers, Simmias and Cebes. Socrates, despite his impending death, was as composed and philosophical as ever. He proposed a notion that, though suicide is wrong, a true philosopher should look forward to death. This statement was the precursor to a profound discussion on the nature of the soul and its immortality. Socrates asserted that the soul is immortal and that the philosopher spends his life training it to detach itself from the needs of the body. He argued that the body is a prison and the philosopher's goal is to free the soul from this imprisonment. As he put it, the lovers of learning know that when philosophy gets hold of their soul, it is imprisoned in and clinging to the body, and that it is forced to examine other things through it as through a cage, and not by itself, and that it wallows in every kind of ignorance.
Socrates presented his first argument for the immortality of the soul, known as the argument from opposites. He posited that everything comes to be from out of its opposite. For instance, a tall man becomes tall only because he was short before. Similarly, death is the opposite of life, and so living things come to be out of dead things, and vice versa. This implies a perpetual cycle of life and death, suggesting that fire and cold. If the form of cold is imperishable and fire, its opposite, was within close proximity, it would have to withdraw intact, just as the soul does during death. This cyclical argument underscores the idea that the soul, being the source of life, must be imperishable.
The second argument Socrates presented was the theory of recollection. This theory suggests that all learning is a matter of recollecting what we already know. We forget much of our knowledge at birth, and proper questioning can help us recollect this knowledge. The fact that we had such knowledge at birth and could forget it implies that our soul existed before we were born. Socrates used the example of a slave boy who, through questioning, was able to recall geometric truths he had never been taught. This, Socrates argued, demonstrates that the soul must have existed prior to birth and thus is immortal. As he said, other people are likely not to be aware that those who pursue philosophy aright study nothing but dying and being dead. Now, if this is true, it would be absurd to be eager for nothing but this all their lives, and then to be troubled when that came for which they had all along been eagerly practicing.
Socrates then presented the argument from affinity, drawing a distinction between immaterial, invisible, and immortal things, and material, visible, and perishable things. The body, he argued, is of the latter kind, whereas the soul is of the former. This distinction suggests that the soul ought to be immortal and survive death. He emphasized that the soul is a self-mover, bringing life to the body by moving it. This is in contrast to inanimate objects, which do not move unless something else moves them. As Socrates explained, all soul is immortal, for that which is always in movement is immortal. That which moves something else and is moved by something else, in ceasing from movement, ceases from living. So only that which moves itself, because it does not abandon itself, never stops moving.
At this point, both Simmias and Cebes raised objections to Socrates' arguments. Simmias suggested that perhaps the soul is like the attunement of a musical instrument, existing only as long as the instrument exists. Cebes argued that while the soul might be long-lived and outlive many bodies, this does not necessarily prove its immortality. Socrates responded to Simmias by pointing out that his theory of attunement conflicts with the theory of recollection, which proposes that the soul existed before the body. He then addressed Cebes's objection by embarking on a complex discussion of causation, ultimately leading him to lay out his fourth argument.
Socrates' fourth argument posited the unchanging and invisible forms as the causes of all things in this world. All things possess what qualities they have only through participation in these forms. The form of life, he suggested, is an essential property of the soul, making it inconceivable to think of the soul as ever being anything but alive. This argument is central to Plato's philosophy, as it introduces the theory of forms for what is arguably the first time. Socrates explained that the forms are eternal and unchanging, and that the soul, by participating in the form of life, is necessarily immortal.
As the discussion drew to a close, Socrates shared a myth about what happens to souls after death. He described how souls journey to different realms based on their deeds in life. The good souls, he said, would join the company of good gods and other virtuous men, while the wicked would face a less favorable fate. Socrates concluded his narrative with a sense of calm and acceptance. He took a bath, said his last goodbyes, and then drank the poisonous hemlock. As the poison took effect, he engaged in a final conversation with his friends, reassuring them that he was not afraid of death. With his last breath, he departed this world, leaving behind a legacy of profound philosophical insights.
As Phaedo finished his account, I, Echecrates, was left with a deep sense of reverence for Socrates and his unwavering commitment to his philosophical beliefs. The Phaedo is more than just an account of Socrates' final hours. It is a testament to the enduring power of his ideas. Socrates' arguments for the immortality of the soul, though presented in the context of his own death, transcend the boundaries of time and mortality. They invite us to reflect on the nature of existence, the role of the philosopher, and the ultimate fate of the soul. In the words of Socrates, the wise man will want to be ever with him who is better than himself. This wisdom, embodied in the Phaedo, continues to inspire and guide those who seek to understand the deeper truths of life and death.